8:15, having arrived, I'm going to call the Education Finance Committee to order. Members, we have three bills, all bonding bills that we're going to hear today. But before we do that, before we hear those bills, Representative Woodard asked a question regarding what might be the impact on the education finances if the sequestration goes through from the federal government. So Ms. Johnson has put something together. So if you would care to, you should have this right here in your packet. There's a sheet that kind of lists numbers and so forth. And hypothetical impact of sequestration on Minnesota K through 12 program. So Ms. Johnson, thank you. And if you'd present this.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This spreadsheet is intended to give you just an overall sense of what the sequestration might have for impact on K-12 education programs here. The data is compiled from the federal funds information for the state's database, which the House and Senate fiscal staff and state agencies have access to. I need to caution that these are estimates based on projections provided by the Congressional Budget Office of across-the-board 5.3% reductions in non-defense discretionary programs. As you can see from the first set of numbers, lines 1 through 29, the majority of the federal funds flowing to Minnesota for K-12 fall into this non-defense discretionary program category. I won't go through each item line by line, but I would like to point out the largest impacts that will be felt in three key program areas under the jurisdiction of this committee. And they are, if you look at lines 3 through 6, as these are for Title I dollars. These are funds that are targeted to schools with large concentrations of at-risk populations to help meet academic achievement standards. If you follow the rows across, you'll see the first set of columns are historical data on how much has been funded for these programs in the past, and then the last set of columns is an attempt to show what the sequestration impact would be. And the last column then would show what the actual dollar projected cuts would be. So for Title I, it's around $8.8 million. The next line item is our line 17 through 19. These are special education dollars. These are the general dollars that help fund special ed in our state. And those impacts would be about $10.5 or $11 million. And then finally, the other big piece is Head Start on line 25, and that's about $4.5 million. So you can see as the total on line 29, about $34 million in total on projected cuts to K-12 programs. Notably absent from this list of our major school-based nutrition programs, these programs on line 33 through 39 are exempt from the across-the-board cuts, so commodities and school and breakfast and lunch programs are not impacted by these cuts. So again, I want to caution that they're estimates, but they give you a pretty good sense of what the impact may be.
Thank you. Any questions for Ms. Johnson? Representative Newton.
Mr. Chair, Ms. Johnson, will these cuts take effect immediately or will these be phased in over a period of time?
Ms. Johnson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Newton, it's hard to say. There's the agency has some programs are forward funded, and so they wouldn't be impacted immediately, but they would take those cuts into the next, or they would start with the next calendar year or school year, but I'm not clear on which ones those are, unfortunately, but I could get back to you if you wanted to know.
Representative Grunhagen.
Representative Newton asked part of my question, and the other part is, I just wanted to emphasize, this is all the more reason as we look at the upcoming budget that, even the governor's proposal, which is based on 4% personal income growth, I just think we're setting up a very rosy scenario of believing sequestration? Why do you come up with names that are hard to pronounce when they want everybody to understand? We want you to understand, we just don't want you to understand. But anyway, I just think we need to be very prudent in terms of where we spend our dollars, and it doesn't, in your own personal business life, I think if you see the potential of a severe financial problem approaching, most individuals and businesses try to plan appropriately. And just to, spend every dollar we have and assume a rosy prediction of personal income growth, I think is very short-sighted in terms of the financial situation at the federal level and also what we might experience here in terms of reductions as far as K-12. Just an observation for members to consider. Thank you.
Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My question is for Ms. Johnson. The sequestration, the 2%, is actually not a cut necessarily, but a 2% slow in growth of current future spending. So there's no actual cut, but 2% slowed growth in spending, future spending. Let me articulate that a little better. Let me drink some coffee here.
No,
so the question is that are the, excuse me?
5%?
5% what? Well, anyway, before I was interrupted, our Representative Hertaus, thanks for correcting me. So is this, in regards to your stats that you just reported, are these actual hard cuts or a slowed growth in future spending that are allocated in Minnesota?
Ms. Johnson.
Mr. Chair, Ms. Representative McDonald, these are cuts. These aren't slowing a growth or anything. This is immediate cuts that would take effect.
Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So just to clarify, so these are not future projected spending, but actual hard line cuts.
Correct.
Ms. Johnson.
From their current budget.
Mr. Chair, members, currently in place, there's a continuing resolution for what the funding level would be at the federal level, and these are comparing the 5.3% to what the current level of continuing resolution is, and so that at that level, it's 5.3% less.
Yeah, that makes any sense. Representative McDonald, I don't know if we, well, you can see what you've had in the past, but I guess we wouldn't know exactly maybe what the federal government authorized last year versus this year, but whether or not that was an increase or a decrease. But Ms. Johnson?
Mr. Chair, members, there are lines here. In the middle, there's fiscal 12. You can see what the actual enacted was. And then two columns over is fiscal 13 annualized continuing resolution. And then what the cuts are based on is based on what's covered under the sequestration based on compared to what was under the continuing resolution.
So, Ms. Johnson, I'm looking at that between 2011 and 2013, it's less. By a little bit, that 158,515, 158,449, but a little bit more than 2012. So
correct.
It's kind of going up and down a little bit, Representative McDonald. Representative Woodard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Ms. Johnson, how does this affect the Minnesota Department of Education with some of their headcount that's funded by the feds?
Mr. Chair,
Ms. Johnson.
Representative Woodard. There, the Department of Education is, I believe, at the state level is about 60% federally funded jobs, and so there's going to be some pretty big impact in terms of jobs or some potential job losses.
And Mr. Chair,
Representative Woodard,
just a quick follow-up. Thank you, Ms. Johnson. So the $34,279,000 that we're looking at that's not reflective of the potential impact on the department, right?
Ms. Johnson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Woodard, I believe it does, especially on the line three, the local education agencies. That's a big piece of their funding. And that's the funds that they use to, they filter that money down through the agency.
And would you mind if I had Mr. McHenry come down and talk to that, Representative Woodard?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was giving him the evil eye, so I assume he saw that.
That
was not to you, Representative Mariani.
You may have to
Mr.
move just off to the side while we give Mr. McHenry. Come forward, if you would, please. And
Mr. Chair, members, Kevin McHenry, Department of Education. Just based on the question, first off, thanks to Ms. Johnson for the work she did putting this together for you all. One of the things for the specifics as to how this affects the department, she is correct. 63% of the funds for our department are federal funds. However, the specific impacts of how that will impact the department, we don't have a specific number just yet. I think right now we're dealing in estimates on these overall numbers, and we're being diligent to try to collect as much information to make sure that we can project specific numbers. But at this time, we don't have anything specific on how this will impact the department.
Representative Woodard.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. McDaniel.
Thank you. All right. Thank you so much, Ms. Johnson, for putting that together. And we will now move to House File 366. And my intent is to pass these bills today and re-refer them to the Committee on Capital Investment. So would someone like to make that motion?
So moved, Mr.
Representative
Chair.
Newton moves House File 366 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Committee on Capital Investment. And Representative Sundin, welcome to the committee. And do you have a author's amendment?
Yes, there's an author's amendment there in front of you as well.
Members, in your packet, you've got the H.O. 366A2 amendment. Would someone care to move that? Also, Representative Morgan moves the A2 amendment. And this is, I think, to get it into the shape that the author wants of the bill. So I'm going to call for the vote on the amendment. All those in favor? Any discussion?
Aye.
Not all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Representative Sundin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, representatives. I'd like to thank you first for getting us first up. The testifiers are on the breakfast menu over at the Senate as well, so we got to get them through this committee as soon as possible. So in front of you, you have two handouts, or should have two handouts, in regards to the issues regarding the two school districts in question. Just an overview.
Representative Sundin, we don't have any handouts, I don't think. Members have any? Okay, here they're. They will be coming around.
You will soon, and take your time and have a look at those. Just an overview. During the past two decades, the Minnesota legislature has often responded to natural and man-made disasters with special legislation designed to speed the recovery from that disaster. Funding is sometimes appropriate for losses incurred by local units of government, including school districts. The funding can be for facility needs, added operational expenses, or for the loss of pupils that follows a disaster. Severe floods affected the Rushford-Peterson School District in 2007 and the Moose Lake School District in 2012. Both districts are seeking to replace the buildings that were damaged by the floods. This bill, as amended, authorizes the facility grants to each of the two districts in an amount not to exceed the lesser of 75% of the total costs, or $20 million per grant. Appropriations, it appropriates $40 million from the state bond proceed fund to make two $20 million school facility grants, one to Moose Lake School District and one to the Rushford-Peterson School District. It requires that the grant not exceed 75% of the total facility cost. Requires that any new building occur outside of the floodplain. This bill has bipartisan support and fulfills our obligation to our state's youth. With me today, I have Bob Inderhar from Moose Lake School District and Chuck Ayler from the Rushford-Peterson School District. And they could answer any questions that this committee might have. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Sundin. Any Representative Erickson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, do you have a historical record of what we've done in the past when these situations have arisen for our school districts? Our council?
I'm going to refer that to Mr. Strom.
Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, we could print off a list of the disaster assistance over the last 15 years, if that's helpful.
Thank you, Mr. Strom. And Mr. Chair,
Representative Erickson.
A question for, I don't know, maybe a question for Mr. Strom again, because I don't know if Representative Sundin would know this, but I know for Peterson-Rushford flood area, there were some unused FEMA funds. Do they have to be returned, or can they be converted to other needs?
Mr. Strom.
Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, I don't know the answer to that. I'm not sure if the Rushford-Peterson folks would know or not. In general, though, those funds are matched for the purpose for which they're assigned. And in the school area, the FEMA part tends to be relatively small.
And then finally, Mr. Chair, to the Moose Lake folks, you were not awarded any kind of recovery for your school. Is that correct?
Mr. Indahar?
That's incorrect. We did get FEMA funding to put the school back together.
So and then,
if you would introduce yourself for tape, please.
I'm Bob Indahar, superintendent at Moose Lake Schools.
Okay, very good. Representative.
So then, Mr. Chair and superintendent, so you did get some FEMA, but not to the extent to cover some of the damage. Is that correct? Maybe you could explain that for us.
Mr. Indahar?
Mr. Chair, representative, can I testify right now?
Just you bet.
Say a couple
Absolutely.
Things.
Sure. You bet.
That's what I was waiting for.
Oh, okay.
Anyhow,
sorry. I didn't know if you were just here for a question.
Mr.
Indahar, go ahead.
Okay. Chairman Marquardt, and I'm here to testify on House File 366. In June of 2012, the Moose Lake schools were surrounded by floodwaters. And I think if you look at your flyer that I put out, probably the bottom picture is the best one for you to see,
wow.
Just to see what the extent of the damage was. There was a valiant attempt to save the school, but in the end what happened was the water seeped in through the walls of the elementary, and it kind of flooded down the hallways in the high school. It actually seeped from the bottom up, and then... Anyhow, we had extensive damage to our school. Our school sustained $853,000 worth of damage. FEMA ended up paying over $750,000 of that, and we got about $66,000 in insurance. So a lot of times we had heard nightmares about FEMA, and I want to say, first of all, thank you to you guys, because you voted to yes, give us 25% of it. And it was needed. Without that, it would have been very devastating to our school. Right now, we have about 90% of the money we've already received, and we were able to open school, believe it or not, on the first day in September. So if you look at that picture and you can imagine what our school looked like, with that funding, we put our school back together in that short period of time. So I thought that was impressive. One of the things that we were told by John Bolger at the State Department was that we would lose students. And we're like, well, how would you lose? What, we're losing students? We ended up losing 36 students from last year to this year. And for a school our size, that's 5% of our population. And as you know, that's how we get our money. Mm-hmm. And so that was devastating to us as well. So what are we worried about? Our building's back together, we're operating. What we're worried about is what are the future damages? I've talked to Chuck Ayler over here many times, and he's going to have a better response to that because they're living with it right now. But we're worried about what happened to the foundation of our school. When you have water rushing underneath your school like that, what happens there? How about the corrosion and the rust that's going to occur because all these parts were underwater? What about the mold? I mean, right now we're testing it constantly to make sure. But, you know, mold doesn't grow when it's, 10 below. It grows when it's warm. So this spring we'll find out about that. We don't want to go through what Rushford's going through. And their flood was 7 years ago. So that's one of our concerns. We want to remove our building from the flood threat. We are in a good position because we own 180 acres on high ground, and that's where we want to put the building. Another concern we have is, will we continue to lose students? If people come to our community and they look at our building versus other buildings, will they choose the other buildings because of perceived problems that we may have or just the way our building looks? My final problem I want to talk about is, how do we go about passing a bond? Honestly, how do we do that? We have a community in crisis. The community, if you see the picture of our school, one-third of our community was underwater. It sustained substantial damage. Some people just got their furnaces, etc. So we know that we've got a community in crisis. We're losing students. We have a poor tax base. This would be the fourth time, if we go out for a bond, this would be the fourth time we've went out for a bond within the last 10 years, and all of them have failed. And, of course, the final strike that just exacerbated everything is the flood. Okay? Why are we asking for $20 million? Seems like a lot of money. We need help passing our bond. That's the bottom line. The system that's in place for bonding has winners and losers in it, and we could have a debate about that, but I'm guessing you know that. And I know that you're trying to address it, but Moose Lake is in the category of a loser because of our tax base. I believe that in the past the state has come through when schools and community are in crisis, and I believe that Rushford, Peterson, and Moose Lake are in crisis. So my final question is, why now? We understand that the flood is still fresh in people's minds, and we feel we have the best shot of getting additional help right now, because we're in a society that it's quick. You forget things. You know, the flood of 2007, you know, do we remember that? Well, Rushford Peterson does, but, you know, do other people remember that? Right now, the flood of 2012 is fresh in people's minds, and we feel that the timing is everything. Also, the timing with bond prices and construction costs, we can get the most bang for our dollar right now, we believe. And so this is why we believe that we would like to build as soon as possible. I've provided an honest picture of where the Moose Lake schools are at, and I hope it resonates with enough of you. I have a saying in my office that I look at every day: do what's right and not what's easy. I feel that the decisions you make with regard to bonding money cannot be easy. I would say that Moose Lake and Rushford Peterson have strong cases for your support. Thank you for all you do as elected officials. Your job is not an easy one, and I'm available if you have any questions.
Representative Erickson.
So thank you, Mr. Chair. Superintendent, you then are asking for bonding for part of the cost, because you feel that if the voters know that we're all going to share in this repair of the facilities in Moose Lake, that maybe you could accomplish passage of the bond. Excuse me, is that correct?
Mr. Andahar?
Mr. Chair, Representative, that is correct. We don't feel we can pass a bond on our own, and it is true that we have our building going now, but we feel there's going to be future things that we need to look at, and we just need help to move that building off the floodplain.
Representative Hertaus.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, testifiers. When these things happen, of course, nobody plans for them, and you've answered some of my questions with regard to getting the building back in into operating condition, and I was just wondering whether or not there was insurance or whether it's a public policy to self-insure in these circumstances. But I'm assuming that your bonding capacity is not exhausted in terms of your ability to bond. It's just that you don't have citizen support for it.
Mr. Andahar.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I actually have Mike Hoheisel here, and he's been helping me. He's with Northland Securities and trying to figure out, you know, what is the tax impact to Moose Lake? If our bond passes, let's just say it's $33 million, if a bond passed for a new pre-K-12, we would jump to 296 out of 337 districts in the state as far as tax impact. Rushford Peterson would jump to 327 out of 337th in the state. And all those numbers could be confusing, but the bottom line is we're pretty close to being in the top percent. I think Rushford Peterson's in the top 3% of tax impact if we were to pass a $33 million bond, and those numbers are from 2012 figures. So,
thank you.
Representative Hertaus.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, you know, that having been said, you know, there clearly is, in most communities understand this, there's a strong nexus between growing communities and strong property values and a good school system, and with that comes the infrastructure to do that. But have you contemplated the idea or the notion that if you need help or support, that this should be, you know, a private or a municipal and state partnership? Where I'm kind of going with this is, what about matching ability in terms of your proposal to have the state bond for part of the project if your voters would support bonding for part of it rather than the entire thing being done by the state?
Mr. Andahar.
Mr. Chair, Representative, that's what the amendment was about, is that we do believe that our community has to show support for this, so we're in agreement with that.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just curious how much, and this is for both, how much existing bond is out there for the current facility? You know, in other words, are there any bonds that you're paying off for the building that you're going to be replacing? And then I really think that it'd be very enlightening to have the Rushford testifier talk about what's come up over the years after the flood that's caused them to look at a new building, and that might help answer some of the questions and issues on Moose Lake.
Very good. Mr. Ayler, if you would like to testify.
Chairman Mark Wirt and representatives, thank you. And Representative Quam, thank you for your questions this morning. I'll answer and follow up with what Bob shared with you this morning. First of all, thank you to Bob for an excellent presentation today, being very clear and very succinct on the impact that he has endured. Representative Quam is asking about...
Mr. Ayler, if you would introduce yourself for the tape so we have it on record. Sorry.
I'm Chuck Ayler. I'm the superintendent at Rushford Peterson Schools.
Very good.
Thank you for this opportunity to share our story and what we have been dealing with since the flood of 2007. Representative Quam asked about debt for our school districts, both for the Moose Lake and the Rushford Peterson. We do not have any outstanding debt, and so both school districts have been very prudent about making sure that they show fiscal responsibility. However, as time goes on, in some respects, that hurts the school district, and in our case, that creates a greater tax impact for us than perhaps it would in other communities. As Bob clearly pointed out to you this morning, we as a district as well, and they are going out for a bond this spring. We went out last December for one, and our bond was voted down 60% to 40%, and we were seeking funds to build a phase-in project for our school district. We were going to start with an early childhood through fifth grade center, and then within 5 to 10 years phase in the other part of the project, and our voters obviously did not approve of that initiative on our part. One of the things that we continue to face is that our building shows repeated indications that our school district is located in a river valley. We have a sand base, and one of the unique things about floods is initially you can see all the damage that took place on the surface. What you don't see is what took place under the surface. And some of the things that we're seeing now, be it shifting in our foundations, ceilings that have cracked. Our building was constructed in 1906. And part of the things that we have in that is that our ceilings are made of lat and plaster. And Chairman Marquardt, if I may, I would like to show a prop from our school to give you an indication, a visual of what we're dealing with.
Props are allowed in this committee. Unlike the House floor, I guess.
This would give you an indication of what I'm talking about. This is the 1906 construction, and as a result of things that are going on in our building, this is the material that falls onto the false ceiling. And when our teachers are teaching, they can hear these sounds. And on occasions, there's a large enough chunks that they do come through. So these are things that we've experienced since the flood. And, you know, people are concerned about asbestos in buildings. And if you could look closely at this, you'll see some fibers in this product. But we assure everyone in this room this is not asbestos. Again, this is 1906 construction, so this would be horsehair that was using as a bonding agent.
Mr. Ayler, last week or 2 weeks ago, we were talking about an oven that was back in the Coolidge administration. That now is back in the Theodore Roosevelt administration, even goes back further.
It's actually pre-Titanic construction,
pre-Titanic.
Yeah.
Yes.
So.
We know what happened to the
Titanic. And we know what happened to the Titanic. Thank you. But on a serious note, the things that we... As Bob has kind of said to me, you know, what can I expect? And as what we've been dealing with through the last 5 to 6 years is that it's a challenge every day for me and for our district, be it plaster that's coming off, the floors that are settling, constant need to address issues within the infrastructure of our building. So that is going to be ongoing for them. And so, as he has clearly pointed out to you today, is that the tax impact is real. And if you will look at the flyer that I gave you this morning as well, ours is the green and gold. And as if you look at the front of that picture, if you look on the very top of that where it says always our best, you will notice that those are floodwaters directly behind our school district. And the unique thing for us is that we weren't so much impacted by floodwaters. We were impacted by raw sewage, 5 to 6 inches worth in our lower level. And I would venture to say that the cleanup for us was extremely, even more challenging from that standpoint. Because again, as Bob indicated to you, you're constantly dealing with mold issues. What are you going to see futuristically? And I can tell him and tell you as elected officials is that air quality is one of the primary concerns that school districts have. And for us, it meant the purchasing of multiple dehumidifiers and utilizing those on a continuous basis, particularly in the summertime. The unique thing for us is that we have the challenge of dealing with a double whammy based on what the flood impacted as well as the age of our facilities. So those two play hand in hand with one another, and so that continues to present us a challenge. So as you can see, from both of our school districts, we have a critical situation. We are compelled as superintendents to make every effort to provide a safe learning environment for our students. And on behalf of Moose Lake and Rushford Petersons, I implore you to carefully analyze and take a look at the critical need that both school districts have at the present time. The safety and the future of our school districts depend on you as elected officials. And I encourage you to embrace the Rushford Peterson School motto, which is always our best. We are counting on you to do your best and to take a serious look at what our critical needs are and to help us assist with the future needs for our school district, our communities, and our students. Thank you.
Mr. Ehler, thank you so much. We have a few more questions here. Representative McDonald.
Mr. Chair, question for the superintendent. I represent a county that has in a city, and I live in a city that has in the floodplain, and my local business is in the floodplain, so I recognize the dire consequences of every spring when we have a big snowfall and the flooding is occurring. It's very tough for a community, so I understand that. Just curious, since 2007, how many levies or how many referendums have you put out for the voters, and each time did they fail? Is that what you said?
Mr. Ehler?
Chairman Mark Ward, representative. Again, I'm in my sixth year as superintendent at Rushford Peterson Schools. Prior to coming to Rushford Peterson, they did go out with a bond referendum in 2002. That one failed by 80-some percent against 20-some percent. The last one that we went out with was in December, because this is my fourth year in a row testifying and requesting the state to assist us with funding dollars for a new school. And each time that I came before legislative hearings, your question was pertinent. When was the last time you went out and asked your voters? And so now I can tell you that we went out on December 19th and asked our voters for their support. Thank you for your question.
Representative McDonald.
Mr. Chairman, so you December was the last time you went out to ask the voters for additional funds or referendum, and they voted it down. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman Marquardt and Representative, yes, they voted it down. The percentage was 40% in favor and 60% against.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative McDonald.
So your school is falling apart. It's in the floodplain. You got the materials from the roof falling on the false ceiling and in some cases breaking through on the classroom floor, perhaps a hazard. And yet those residents of your community refused to pay for it?
Mr. Ehler.
Chairman Mark Wart, Representative, I don't think it's a matter of refused. I think that for our community, you have to understand, as Bob pointed out to you, the tax impact for us. We are, in our community, 90% of our business were flooded or impacted, severely impacted, and 730 homes were impacted. Many of our residents had to take out double mortgages to make ends meet and to meet the replacement costs or improvement costs of their homes. As a result of that, also our free and reduced numbers went from 38% And it's on the flyer that I gave you this morning. Went from 38% to 58%, and now we're currently at 51%. So it hasn't gone away. Everybody believes that a flood can be taken care of within a five-year time frame, and I'm here to inform you that is not the case. It's more like anywhere from 10 to 20 years before you're able. Unfortunately, we were not able to convince. One of the reasons that our residents voted our bond referendum down is they didn't like necessarily the phase-in project. You know, it called for an early childhood through five-grade center. And our residents said, we really want the state to step forward, come in and help us out. But we're going to send a message not only to you as our superintendent of schools, find a way to make this happen. That's why we're here today.
Representative McDonald?
Yeah, last question. Thank you. Okay. Maybe this is for staff. Oftentimes the city will ask for a grant money, of course, and it's a match, a 50% match. The city of Delano actually is currently doing that for some businesses and homes in our floodplain as well. But it's a match. So I think you mentioned something about Representative Erickson asked about if the city's contributing. So the question for staff perhaps is, in this bond, if this request, if this bill, if this passes, is it a 50% match with their local municipalities?
Mr. Strom?
Mr. Chair, Representative McDonald, as the superintendent said, they're seeking a $20 million grant on a $33 million project. So that's the ratio they're looking at. The amendment that was adopted this morning said that in no case could the state grant exceed 75% of the project cost.
Thank you. Yeah, my good friend Representative Hortas again gave me the information necessary. So thank you, Mr. Strom, as well.
Very good. Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks for the testimony. Yeah, as a representative, we want to help out where there's acts of God, where at all possible. So the only question I have is, and I appreciate the matching grant from the local people as a mechanism to actually initiate this. But, for the new school districts, sometimes when there's an act of God, the price of replacing something seems to go up exponentially. Now, the thing is, sometimes that's due to market competition and the need. But do you know the square foot of cost of the new districts or the new buildings you're proposing comparative to new school district construction in the state on an average? Do you follow my question?
Yes.
Mr. Ayler?
Thank you, Chairman Marquardt and Representative. The unique thing, as you indicated, is there an inflation cost here, replacement, and there is not. We have gone out and hired an architectural firm by ATS&R. We also work with IS Consulting, and they have been with us since 2008, and they have assisted us in this whole process. So I can assure you that back in 2002 when they went out for the building for Rushford Peterson, the costs were around $135 a square foot, and we're looking at somewhere over $150 a square foot, so 10 years later. So each year, building costs rise at a rate of about 3%. So Superintendent Indahar indicated to you the need for action to be now, and I want to emphasize that as well, because costs will continue to go up, and we're at a prime time for interest rates at an all-time low, and construction costs are favorable.
Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. So if I understand your answer correctly, it's $150 a square foot on the proposed two new facilities?
Mr. Ayler.
Thank you, Chairman Marquardt and Representative. I don't have those numbers with me, so I will be happy to get you that information that ATS&R has given us. So I don't want to give you something that isn't accurate, so allow me to provide that to you. Thank you.
Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Having been in the area close to Rushford Peterson, and plus the fact that we had a recent flood near, just to the north instead of the east, depending on the impact, as I said, to the community, to the businesses, there's a lot of stress added. And I think Rushford Peterson probably has a higher stress load from the percentage of impact to the business community and the people around the area. So I can understand that being part of the issue with trying to pass a referendum if they can barely make make things go with rebuilding their own home. They might, you know, financially not be able to support that. So, you know, I would like to add to the viewpoint that I think the area was severely impacted. It's hard to say one flood is worse than another. If it's your basement or house or business, it, you know, it doesn't matter how wide it was, because, you know, it devastates you. I do have some sympathy with Representative Grunhagen's questioning about the cost. I guess I have some familiarity with the architectural firm, and when we were building a high school, our first bond failed with that firm, and we went to a different firm and ended up doing it for about 25% less and having, you know, more capacity. So it might behoove the people to look at, you know, the total project. But when it comes down to it, I honestly feel that, you know, government has a place in disaster relief, and I don't think that this is an untoward thing to look at. I would, you know, I will be, you know, supporting this, even though I do have concerns as to, you know, minimizing the, you know, scale and cost of the project. I don't have concerns about there ought to be a project. So that's just my feelings on this issue.
Representative Wills.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for the testimony. This is just a clerical comment I noticed as I was reading through the amendment. I noticed on line 1.3, where it says page 1, line 13, after D, if I'm not mistaken, when it looking at the bill itself, it should be C instead of D. And then there was another one.
Representative Wills, you're reading these amendments?
I am.
Good grief. No, just very good. So is that a, Mr. Strom, that's a, okay, that, well, you made the, okay, is there, did you find
there
something
was,
else?
There was one more as well.
No, we'll have you redo the amendment, okay.
Well, the spelling of lesser should be consistent as well.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Oh, I didn't
there's the English teacher, Representative Erickson,
I didn't catch
chiming
that
in.
One. I caught another spelling error on line 1.7. It says statues instead of statutes.
Representative Wills, we cannot have spelling mistakes here in Education Committee.
Whose so. Amendment is this?
I just want to make sure it's...
Do we have to, does Representative Morgan have to make any...
Just incorporate.
Okay, we'll just, would you incorporate these changes into your amendment?
Mr. Chair, if staff would incorporate the changes necessary to fix technical problems with the amendment, I'd appreciate it. Thank you.
So
thank you,
Representative
Wills.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So, well, I'm going to call, first of all, thank the testifiers. And when they're talking about floods, I'm very sympathetic to flooding. Of course, being along the Red River Valley in 1997, Breckenridge, the city was flooded, a different type of flood. You know, it was a spring flood, like East Grand Forks, spring flood. But even with the best preparation, could not stop those floods, different from a summer flood, which comes so unexpectedly, like the ones here. But the city of Ada also. And I was going to ask everyone who was before us today to justify why we should be bonding in this situation when all other communities, if they do new buildings, just go to the voters for the entire project. But I think both of you have done an excellent job of explaining just what a flood does. And it is devastating. And, you know, the folks in the community don't recover in a year or two or three. And in Breckenridge, they're still working. 16 years later, they're still working on still repairs and mitigation and throughout. So it is a long-term type of thing, and with lower tax bases, you already explained and answered that question sufficiently. So members, I'm going to their representative, Representative Newton's amendment as, I'd like, Representative Hurtas, you get?
Just one quick question.
Go ahead.
Thank you, sir. I was just curious, how many students does your school district serve at this facility? You go
ahead. Mr. Endahar?
Chair and Representative, we have, right now we have 640 students K-12.
Chair and Representative, right now Rochford Peterson serves 660 students, and we have another 86 students in our early childhood program. So I'm just going to add one addendum to that. As Superintendent Indar indicated to you, the loss of students preceding the flood, we lost 13 students. We were fortunate to get three of those back. So the reality is families are impacted to the point where it is not feasible or possible for them to move back into the school district. Thank you.
Very good. Representative Sundin, any closing remarks?
I'd just like to, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to thank the committee for their attention to this matter and thank the testifiers for their, I think, very complete analysis of the flood damage to both of their districts. Thank you.
Very good. At this time, I'd like to call for a vote on the Newton motion on House File 366 to pass this as amended and re-refer it to the Capital Investment Committee. I'm going to call for the vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed say nay. Motion carried. So has prevailed. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Next, we're going to hear, House File 390. But with that, could I have a motion? Representative Wills, I'm expecting you have also read the minutes. So would you make that motion for the...
Mr. Chair, I will move the minutes of the February 21st meeting.
Representative Wills moves the February 21st, 2013 minutes. Any discussion on that? If not, I'm going to call for the vote on the minutes. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. The minutes are approved. Thank you. Representative Fritz, welcome back.
Well, thank you.
And we'll have someone, would someone like to move House File 390? Representative Selzer moves House File 390. Recommend a pass and re-refer to the Committee on Capital Investment. And do you have an amendment?
I do, Mr. Chairman. I have a delete all amendment. DE1.
Okay. So do I have someone that will make the motion for the DE H0390 DE1 amendment?
So moved.
Representative Grunhagen, thank you, moves the DE1 amendment. I'm going to call for the vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. The motion prevails. Amendment is adopted. Representative Fritz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. Today we, again, are back with the State Academies for the Deaf and Blind. And I have with me Brad Harper, the superintendent, and Peter Hargraves, principal project manager, who also knows the numbers. He's sort of the numbers guy here today. Mr. Harper is our new superintendent. And so he's been looking into things and I think finding a few interesting ideas. And he has come to us again today to with this delete all amendment. And you'll notice that we've gone down in cost quite a bit. The project is different, and we would like to present that. The reason for that, I'd like to have Mr. Harper do that and then talk a little bit about the project and the State Academies. And he's also placed a picture of the academies. For some of you have never been there, it's a beautiful picture. And I actually have one in my office. You're welcome to come by anytime to take a look at it. And oftentimes when people come in and look at it, they say to me, can I come down there and see that? Because it's just a beautiful building that we all own.
Mm-hmm.
They're our state academies. So I'm going to turn it over at this time, Mr. Chairman, if I could, to the Superintendent Brad Harper.
Thank you very much, and welcome back, Superintendent Harper. And before you go, what year was that building built that we're looking at right now? Do we? Or is it?
That's
150. I've been told it's 150 years old. It's on the Federal Historical Building Register, that and a second building called Noise Hall. Mm. So they're very old, very beautiful, and been maintained very, very well with the support of the state legislature and the governor's office.
Well, the artifacts just keep getting older in this committee. Yeah, and so do Paul. Superintendent Harper, please proceed.
Mr. Chairman and committee members, it's a pleasure to be back here again to present some information to you. I'm still a little naive in this whole process. This time I brought a visual aid to help with the presentation. Part of my naivete is on the bonding process and how things get built in the state, how things get redone in the state. So when we have completed a pre-design for the new dormitory on the campus at MSAD, Minnesota State Academy for the Deaf. That pre-design, I assumed incorrectly, contained all of the costs for that project. And so consequently, we were going to approach the committee for funds to rebuild that or to build a new dormitory. As we looked at things and as documents came to us, we found out that we have not completed the design phase. So with that, I contacted Peter Hargraves, who is the senior project manager and who helped us with the pre-design, to explain to me, well, I thought we had this all figured out. Well, you did. You can build the dormitory for X number of dollars, $3.6 million, but there's still some other costs that are not accounted for, and namely, one of the primary costs is the design. And so that's a formal process that we need to go through in order to move this project forward. Now, given the state of, well, given our economic situation, given the struggles that we have, it made no sense to me to approach you and ask for the full amount to rebuild the dorm or to build a new dormitory. The timing wasn't done, and we hadn't shown due diligence in getting the design phase done. So that's why we're here today, is to talk about $810,000 to complete a design so that we can then approach this project more totally next year when that project is done. Just kind of historically, for this year, we have or put together 9 different initiatives that are going to require some support. 4 of those initiatives are moving forward. Last week, we were here talking about some ovens and a dishwashing machine. So we have 4 things moving forward. 1 of those 9 items is going to be addressed by the governing board. And then today, we're addressing the design phase for the new dormitory. I think it's important for us to have a focused presentation, to be cognizant of the financial economy and the financial conditions that everybody has to deal with, and that's why we've reduced our request from the entire project, or what I assumed was the entire project, to a much more realistic amount to complete the design phase. Given that, I'd be glad to answer some questions that you may have.
Any questions? Representative Grunhagen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, the only question I have is, normally, in my experience, design costs are about 5% of the project. Am I interpreting this correctly? It's $6.5 million, which was the original bill. 5% is a little over $300,000, and yet we're appropriating $810,000 for the design. Or am I missing something?
Mr. Hargraves, if you would introduce yourself for the record.
Sorry. My name is Peter Hargraves. I'm an architect, and I'm with Real Estate and Construction Services with the Department of Administration. Thank you. Representative, it's anywhere from 5 to 10% is typical architectural fees.
Mr. Representative Grunhagen.
And yeah. This tends to run more than 10% even, so is there a special situation? And I understand there's caveats where sometimes the cost is higher, but it seems on its face to be a little excessive in terms of the charge for the design.
Mr. Hargraves?
Chair and Representative, unfortunately I don't have the numbers in front of me. I know Representative Fritz said I was a number person. I don't have those in front of me. So I didn't realize I had this meeting until late yesterday, so I don't have that document. I could be more thorough if I had the document.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Grunhagen.
Since it's outside the norm, I think it is important to find out. You know, the reason I say that is because, you know, taxes are coming from people who are struggling to pay their electric bills, and I think this request is valid, and I believe it's a statewide responsibility. I've had constituents who've benefited from the school there, okay, and have gone on to the Washington, D.C. one, so I don't have any problems there, but, you know, I just think we got to squeeze every dollar nowadays, and people are paying in taxes and struggling to pay their electric bill, buying the higher food cost, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I just think this is outside the norm that I've seen. I've seen closer to 5%. The response was between 5 and 10%. Well, even at 10%, we're looking at $650,000, not $810,000. And I just think let's squeeze those dollars a little bit because obviously there's unlimited needs and we have a limited amount of money. Just an observation. Thank you. Yeah.
Superintendent Harper.
That was an excellent analysis, and I think that we would not disagree with you. What I would say is that what we found out in the final documents from, I don't know the name of the group that does the review, but the total cost that they said for the dorm construction is about $10.7 million. So given that amount, the $800,000 seems a little bit more realistic. Okay. If we're talking only about $6.5 million, then your assessment and your analysis is right on the money. But I think that when we look at the total cost of $10.7 million, which is what the estimate was, then I think we're much more in the ballpark, and we're not outliers in terms of that estimate.
Could I?
Yeah.
Mr. Hargrave, may I add something, Chair Representative? There also are costs involved in the demolition of the project, so that has to be considered. There are also costs in that fee for surveys and soil borings and all the things that you would need to begin to design that building. You would have to have that information prior to construction, and typically as you design it, so you're obviously developing a structure that's going to accommodate the building and bear on the soils. Thank you.
Okay. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to any one of the testifiers. How many persons will this dormitory house, and is it just for rooms for the residents, or is it going to have a cafeteria in it, a library? Could you describe that to us to the extent you know?
Superintendent Harper.
I'd be glad to. It'll house 60 students. It will have an educational wing. It will have an activity wing. It will also be designed to allow for a concept called deaf space, which allows for sight lines and for communication at some distance between adults and students. And that's the intent of the design at this point.
All right. Seeing no other further questions, Representative Hertas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for coming before us again. I happen to be a member of the building and construction development industry, and I just want to point out that given the circumstances right now with favorable interest rates and generally a lack of work, I would recommend that you certainly go out and get an RFP with the project being larger for the architectural fees tends to drive the cost down a little bit. Obviously, fees are higher if the project is small as a ratio or percentage. I understand the aspect of the engineering and the soil borings, but even at that, I would echo some of Representative Grunhagen's comments and concerns. And it's about $300 a boring for soil tests. And surveying is not extraordinarily expensive, so based on the project, you know, I wouldn't see that you have too much more than $5,000 to $10,000 of engineering and surveying. So I think there's certainly room to be prudent in how the taxpayer dollars are being spent, and that's the comments I wanted to add.
Thank you. Representative Fritz, any closing comments.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, members, for your questions and concerns. And we all, and as you know, we are very frugal and want to get the best bang for our buck down there at our State Academy, so to speak. So I don't think that this $810,000 is out of line with the $10 million structure that we're going to build. And need to build, and so I do again just request that you you vote this in and on to the bonding bill for us and for our academies and students. And thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Representative Seltzer had made a motion, and so we're going to vote on House File 390 as amended to be passed and re-referred to the Committee on Capital Investment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. House File 390, as amended, is approved, passed, and will be re-referred to the Committee on Capital Investment. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, members.
Oh, I know. I never. When I would get that assembly thing together, I never did. No. All right. House File 225, Representative Erickson.
Do we have a tech person here to help set up the PowerPoint?
We will see if we can do that. Meanwhile, is there an amendment on 225? Okay. Would someone like to move House File 225?
So moved.
I'm sorry. Representative Radenovich moves House File 225 to be passed and re-referred to the Committee on Capital Investment. Representative Erickson, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, a couple of things. Red Lake is in my district. They're a Native American group from the Red Lake area. I've toured this facility, and quite literally, the kitchen is older than I am. So, and getting to my advanced middle age, that's saying something else. I just want to get going on this. I know you're kind of pressed for time, so I'm going to turn it over to Superintendent Steve Wymore. I had the privilege of working under him for 3 or 4 years in Bedette, kind of last years that I retired, and then Superintendent Wymore moved down to Red Lake, and I'll just turn the program over to you. So thank you, Chairman.
All right. Superintendent Wymore, if you would introduce yourself and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Steve Wymore. I'm superintendent at Red Lake Public Schools. With me today, Mr. Chairman and committee members, I have Roy Nelson, who is the school board treasurer, Willie Larson, who is the school business manager, and sitting next to me, Chris Borg, who is our facility supervisor. I have a prepared statement, Mr. Chair, that I'd like to read into the record, if I could. Bonjour. I'd like to thank Representative Paul Marquardt, the chairman of the House Education Finance Committee, and its members for your time to hear a bill introduced by Representative Roger Erickson and the 14 additional authors, whom we also wish to thank. We believe that the provisions of House File 225 will strengthen the Red Lake School District. Red Lake Public Schools employs a staff of 336 employees on three separate sites. The district employees include 162 non-licensed employees, 179 licensed employees, 167 of whom are teachers. The district provides education for 1,378 students in grades kindergarten through 12th grade, inclusive of an alternative learning program. The Independent School District Number 38, Red Lake Schools, with a 2010 U.S. Census population of 5,890 and comprising 1,014 square miles, is located approximately 265 miles north of the Minneapolis-St. Paul metropolitan area, along Minnesota State Trunk Highway 89 and Highway 1. It lies completely within the boundaries of the Red Lake Indian Reservation. The Red Lake Schools is a consolidated school district serving the communities of Panema, Red Bee, Little Rock, and Red Lake. Red Lake Schools is unique as a Minnesota public school in that it resides completely within the boundaries of a closed federal trust land reservation, one of only two remaining in the United States today. The recent horrific event at the Sandy Hook Elementary School in Newtown, Connecticut, raised memories of the tragedy that occurred March 21st, 2005, on the Red Lake Indian Reservation, which continues to affect everyone who lives and works in the community and the school. However, the lessons learned from that tragedy have been utilized to provide one of the most caring and nurturing environments possible in facilities desperately in need of improvement. The district has submitted capital loan funding requests every year since 2002, yet has only received appropriations twice that were approved by the governor. Both of these appropriations were only small percentages of the request. The original request in 2002 was for $37.9 million, which escalated in today's dollars equals approximately $68 million. These requests are for additions and improvements to the district facilities. Since the district does not have adequate bonding capacity due to the large amount of the federal property in the district, requests must be made to the state of Minnesota for capital loans. While pieces of the project were approved in 2002 and 2005, the cost for the remainder of the project continues to grow. Over the past 4 years, the legislature has included appropriations for these projects only to have them vetoed by the governor, and last year the Red Lake School's bonding request was not included in the funded projects. The Minnesota Department of Education requested $32,586,656 in funding last year through the Maximum Effort Capital Loan Program to support the Red Lake Independent School District in bringing district facilities to current educational standards. At that time, the Minnesota Department of Education pointed out that a measure commonly used to compare a school district's ability to raise funds through property taxes is the adjusted net tax capacity per pupil unit. The Red Lake ANTC per fiscal year 2010 adjusted pupil unit was $7.32. Statewide, the median school district ANTC per adjusted pupil unit was $6,536. While the challenges our public parents, staff, and students face can be overwhelming, the Red Lake Schools continues to be an expedient for fostering the strong community that is the Red Lake Nation. I would ask the committee to support House File 225 and appropriate $33 million for the Red Lake Schools renovation and construction project that can be completed with these capital loan funds. With these enhancements, the district can begin reinforcing the programs that have suffered as a result of inadequate facilities and send a message to the constituents of the Red Lake Schools that the state of Minnesota is willing to help the district provide high-quality education in a nurturing, caring, and safe environment where resources can be focused on raising student achievement for all children. Miigwech. Mr. Chairman, I would like to ask Chris Borg if it's possible to go through the project priorities and have any discussion about the facilities if the committee so desires.
Very good. Mr. Borg, if you would state your name for the record here and begin your testimony.
Chairman, Chris Borg, Facilities Manager, Red Lake School District 38. What we did was we broke down the construction projects into priorities. You guys can see okay?
Mm-hmm.
PowerPoint. The number one priority is the construction of the kitchen cafeteria, construction of the receiving dock, and an adjacent site work. The first priority is the creation of a single lunchroom and kitchen for the entire high school and middle school, replacing two outdated facilities. The project includes a new building, receiving area, service drive, and dock area, as well as an expansion of the existing stormwater retention fire service drive. And you can see the building footprint there, and in green, service kitchen and cafeteria, because it's all on page 4 of your handout. And I went through the kitchens. This happens to be in the middle school kitchen. I just took a picture of some of the antiquated equipment that they have in there. You can tell by the block and the quarry tile on the floor is pretty dated and decades old. Dishwashing area. Picture's a little crude. I apologize, but this is a small bathroom right off the cafeteria. If you look up on the ceiling, you can see there's a ceiling fan, that there's some mold that's starting to go on that area because of a roof leak in that area. This is an area where whatever fruits and vegetables. It's hard to get a picture of it. It's a small area. More pictures of the cafeteria just to give you a feel. Or wash your dishes. Again, it's a tight space. Priority 2, media center, central plant improvements, physical education and fitness, high school, media center, district offices, and student services. When the completion of the new kitchen and cafeteria, the original elementary school can be demoed. This area includes a steam boiler plant, middle school kitchen, cafeteria, and multiple elevation changes. Once removed, district student services, media center, and technology labs, and PE locker rooms and support areas will be built and expanded. A 2010 Department of Commerce and Energy grant began the central heating plant expansion and decommissioning the old steam plant. Additional work remains and will complete other central plant elements, including conversion of remaining existing. We're going to be going from steam to glycol. This is the last area of the district that has steam in it. Get a picture. This is a picture of the old steam boilers. They're unsafe. They've lived their life. They're not efficient. And the price of energy today, it'd be nice to get rid of these. It's also the last area of the district to have asbestos in it. In this picture, you can see there's some mastic on the ceiling that holds up ceiling tile. In that mastic, or that glue, that's where the asbestos is contained. Moving on to priority number 3, high school vocational center, middle school hands-on learning labs, middle school fitness and nutrition center. Currently, the high school vocational center is located within the middle school. The construction would replace the current small and outdated facility with a new vocational center in the high school. It will be a self-contained facility which allows for the use by the alternative and adult education programs without disrupting activities in other parts of the building. When the new high school vocational center is complete, the old spaces as well as the high school cafeteria can be converted to middle school hands-on learning labs, shop technology labs, fitness, and nutrition.
Mr. Borg, on the next 3, I think you have 6 priorities.
Yeah.
And just, I want to leave plenty of time for questions. So if you could just kind of summarize this so we can kind of see where it's at and the price tag, that would be good.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, thank you. Priority number 4, service drives and lots, site improvements, environmental studies, vocational building envelope, and furniture, fixtures, and equipment, or FF&E. Total amount for that is $3,149,000. When the ERA dollars were out in 2010, remodeled the inside of the building, but the exterior of the building envelope is in rough shape. It needs to be improved. Priority number 5 is the Panema Elementary School. There's ball fields, media center, remodel, and expansion. Price now is $1,844,000. Location of Panema is about 30 miles north of Red Lake on the Red Lake Indian Reservation. And priority number 6, Red Lake Elementary Early Childhood Center. The project here would be connecting the two schools. Early childhood is a separate school from elementary school. There's a big influx of kids coming into that school. The cost of that project is $7,973,000. And I'd like to open up for questions, Mr. Chairman.
Very good. Mr. Borg, thank you. Questions for any of the testifiers? Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First, a question for Mr. Strom. Since these are maximum effort loans, would I be correct in saying that Red Lake now is up to $73 million in capital loans, maximum capital effort loans. Is it correct if I just add up those approved by the legislature and signed by the governor?
Mr. Strom?
Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, yes, I don't have that number in front of me, but that seems about right. The other issue is there. I think the Department of Finance tracks the interest costs for Red Lake different than other districts, since there's no, because of no tax base, there's no hope of Red Lake ever paying back any of the maximum effort loan. So it functions more as a grant. So on the interest cost, they may track that differently. But yes, you can go ahead and add all of the individual grants that have been made under the maximum effort program for Red Lake.
Thank you. I think that's a good clarification to realize that. In most maximum effort loans, we expect repayment. If not in 50 years, it's forgiven. I think it used to be 30, didn't it? And we changed it to 50. But for Red Lake, that is basically a grant, not a loan. So to the testifiers, how many students do you serve?
Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Erickson, we serve 1,378 students, grades K through 12, plus we have preschool program. That's, I don't have the exact number for that program.
And Mr.
Representative
Chair,
Erickson.
And sir, are any federal grants available to you to help in your facilities, improvements, or expansions?
Superintendent Wymore.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Erickson, we receive federal impact aid dollars, and nationally they appropriate a little more than $17 million for the whole country. Ooh. For facilities. The rest of the money is used for instruction.
And then one last question,
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Superintendent, does the school facilities receive any dollars from your casino revenues?
Superintendent Wymore.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Erickson, they do not. The casino is primarily in a rural area. It does not generate the same type of revenue that one that is down in the metropolitan area. It is used primarily as a job provider for Native Americans that live on the reservation or off the reservation, but are members of the band. There's preferential hiring for that. So I would say it's more of a jobs program, and any revenue that is generated is used to operate the tribe, their functions, comprehensive health services, social programs, and so on.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Radinovich.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Could you speak to the demographics of the population that this school serves? Do you know, like, median income in your community or any of the indicators like that?
Superintendent Wymore.
Mr. Chairman, I can give you a rough estimate. Depending on the time of the year, we range between 65% and 85% unemployment. 98% of the students that we serve are Red Lake Band members or Native American students. The free and reduced lunch rate is about 90% in our school district.
Representative Radinovich.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Any other comments? Representative Erickson? Roger?
Roger.
Sorry. Do you have any closing comments?
Just one comment. If you notice that one little white building when they're flipping through the things, that's the administrative offices. I was just the most amazed person in the entire world when I drove up to this building and going into the superintendent office that is in this building. And this is not part of their plan. They're not trying to feather the nest of the administration. This building probably should be in the plan because it is old and outdated. And so this project is for the students of Red Lake. This is not for any other purpose. And I'd really hope that you would look favorably upon this. Thank you.
Also, before we take any more questions, and I've have been negligent in not asking if there's anyone from the audience who would like to speak for or against House Pile 225, or in this case also on any of the earlier bills that we heard for or against.
Yes. Good morning, everyone. Roy Nelson here from Red Lake School District. Wait, serve as a board member. Have been since 1991. And then, like I said, this here is my little calling card Panema, Minnesota. I don't know if everybody or somebody might have caught it when he was watching the inauguration just recently where Colin Peterson had his hat on. He got one for me. He got it for nothing, but there's two other ones out there which they were at a spring fundraising, what do you call it, and they actually had to buy them. But no, there's only mine and then plus the other three that's out there. But no, just like to encourage it, we've been at this project for, you know, for a long time. And just, and as for everything that you've seen there, I can go back to when the old Panema building was in place and stuff. It was actually built out of 3-inch planks of wood and stuff like this. Yeah. So, but that since, you know, we've upgraded some, but we still need a little bit more improvement. But then I also concentrate more on academics for, you know, all the students and stuff and everything. There's a book out there called Spark. I ran into, a brain conference where it's actually for Phi Ed. There was two coaches in Naperville, Illinois, who believed that Phi Ed was still needed when there was a push to eliminate Phi Ed. And there was a researcher out of Boston, Harvard, who actually did the research and where it shows where if you get a student's heart rate up to a maximum of 180, it can be 170, 160, and then you send them off to the next most challenging class, they retain 80% of what they learn in that class and stuff. And then in talking to fellow board members, there was another one out of Nevis. Or it's unscientific. He goes, a Phi Ed teacher put up a poem on the wall and stuff like this and had the students read it and come back the next day, and they 80% of them remembered it. They did the same example in English class, and the next day only 20% remembered it. So as for, you know, Phi Ed, as for the, you've seen where the gyms are and stuff like this, I am trying to get more more Phi Ed and stuff in there, in the classroom and stuff in there. Plus, you know, I work EMS services. I started changing my diet way back in when I was 34. I'm 62 now, and you know, not on no meds. Whereas, I see my fellow community members because of diabetes and stuff like this. You know, they gotta, you know, go to dialysis and stuff. I'm trying to be the role model, be the example. You know, to eat heart healthy and to exercise and stuff. And then, like I said, as for stronger academics, yeah. So make everything, you know, just trying to make the best of a, you know.
Thank you.
That situation. Thanks. Any questions or anything?
Thank you.
Okay.
Anyone else from the audience for or against any of the bills today? All right. We had a Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for the presentation. I would just say that, and I was on the school board for 16 years, so we had a lot of agency requests every year that we dealt with. And my experience has been, and I'm not saying this is the case, is that most people ask for, you know, probably 110% of what they actually need. I'm not saying you did that, okay, but that's been my experience. And when I look, and I appreciate the fact that you prioritize things, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6. And again, this is just a layman's summary of what I see. But I see priority 1, 2, and 3 as being pretty necessary. I get to 4, and I see furnitures and fixtures and equipment, site improvements, environmental studies. Again, I'm not an expert. I'm a lay person. But, you know, I'm just saying if you get into a situation where you have to negotiate the amount of your bonding issue, I would, you know, I'd take a half a loaf rather than the whole loaf. I'm sure you understand that. And when you have unlimited requests, which we do, okay, we have to look at the need, want, and desire. So I do appreciate the prioritization. I guess I would ask you to seriously consider looking at all 6 of your priorities and putting them into a need, want, and desire, and hopefully something will work out for you as far as the bonding issue is concerned. Okay?
Mr. Borden?
I just wanted to mention that when we look at these priorities, and this is across the entire district, that if we look at this as a whole, the $32 million, we get an economy as a scale with mobilization and having the horses there to get it all done. When we break it out and piecemeal it, I mean, these are all viable needs. Mm-hmm. When we break it all out, that drives up the cost of getting the square footage and doing the projects that we plan on doing. I
I sure appreciate it.
Representative Erickson, our final comment.
Oh, boy. Thank you. One other thing, too, is you talked earlier to the other one about planning costs. They're done. The plans are done. The plans are in place. That was done a while ago, so they don't have that cost built into there. So that's another thing that this project truly is shovel-ready. So that's my last comment. Thank you.
Representative Radenovich has a motion on House File 225 to recommend to pass and to re-refer it to the Committee on Capital Investment. I'm going to call for the vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. Motion carries. So thank you so much. That's my Representative Erickson.
Mr.
Thank
Chairman.
You. And members, oh, Representative Woodard has a Representative Woodard. Has a comment.
Oh, everybody sit down over there.
Yeah.
No, just very quickly. I just had a question for Mr. Schramm or Ms. Johnson. This disaster relief assistant Excel spreadsheet we just received, thank you very much for that. It was very quick. It does appear, though, that from a bonding standpoint, we haven't really ever bonded to the amounts we're talking about for flood relief for school districts. Am I reading that right?
Mr. Strom?
Mr. Chair, Representative Woodard, yes.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Well, I told you it was simple.
Yeah.
And just
Representative Woodard.
Just a quick closing comment, too, Mr. Chair. And, you know, as I'm sitting here listening to these are certainly very interesting and good needs. And, you know, combined, it's about $73.8 million in borrowing. And I'm struck by the fact that the Constitution requires us to have 3/5 majority to pass that, and yet we still don't have the 3/5 majority to pass the ability for us to shift. I mean, it's about $87 million that Mr. Strom has identified.
Representative Woodard, we're running out of time.
From a bipartisan standpoint, House File 1 should be a priority, as well as House File 53. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much, Representative Woodard. And a quick reminder, members, tomorrow's meeting is in the basement hearing room. We're switching with another committee. So in the basement hearing room tomorrow, Representative Grunhagen.
I was just going to observe, Mr. Chair, that on issues of 89 years or older, we sure have a lot of bipartisan commitment. So if we could stick to those issues, I'd appreciate it.
That's a great point, and we'll end on that. We are adjourned, members.